John's just told me that he was actually at the regional council meeting where they were choosing the chair of the council. But the regional council, which is different to the district council, we always talk about the mayor. The mayor is the mayor of the district council. The regional council is a bigger space, and we don't elect a mayor. We just elect the councillors, and then they vote amongst themselves who the chairperson is going to be, just like the Raglan Community Board. Same process. John, you were there. Who is the chairperson?
I wasn't there, but I was watching the video. So
it's like you were there.
Unlike the district council, the regional council puts all their meetings on videos these days.
Right, okay.
So you can go to the regional council website and have a look at the video.
Maybe that's a question for the new mayor of the district council.
Yeah. But she did say she was looking for more open and transparent communication, so that could well be part of it. The regional council apparently is split 7-7 because they had a vote on the chair and the deputy chair, and both were 7-7 and both got drawn out of a hat.
So, Harold, who were the two that they were split with?
For the chair, it was Stu Kneebone and our own councillor, Pamela Storey.
Okay, so
7-7.
They were both. They were both there last time. Stu Kneebone was there before.
Stu Kneebone's been there for a long time. I think he's been in at least 9 years, maybe more.
Okay. All right. And Pamela Storey, three years. 3 years.
It was quite interesting listening to them both talking, and they both had quite similar things to say about trying to run the council so that there weren't the major disputes in the last session that they had.
Folks, if you haven't heard about what happened at the regional council last year, you must be new to the morning show. It was pretty well famous, and it was noticeable to actually too that all the people involved with those disputes got turfed out at the election.
Voters
seemed to be unimpressed by it.
It was interesting in the video to see Russ Remington sat at the back of the room watching what was going on.
Oh, really? But he's not a councillor, is he? He definitely got voted out. That's what I thought.
But he turned up to see what was going on.
You can't keep away.
I suppose once you've been involved in that, you want to know what's going to happen next.
I guess so.
Especially when you're voting for the chair. So,
because he'll know who he has to grumble about.
Yeah.
So who won, John? Who won?
Well, Pamela Storey won that chair vote.
Right.
So she got picked out of the hat.
So that's what they did in the end?
Yes. Well, they had a choice between tossing a coin or picking out of a hat, and they decided to pick out of a hat. So they put two pre-printed names into the hat. I didn't see them shake the hat, which would have been useful, but and then they held it up above their heads, and they... chair of the regional council fumbled around in there and pulled out.
Hold on,
one.
The chair?
The chief executive.
Chief executive,
So the meeting was run by the chief executive until they'd appointed a chair.
Yes.
And then Pamela Storey took over.
Right.
And then they had an election again for the vice chair. And again, it was a 7-7 split. And so again, they drew it out of a hat. And again, it was a matter of trying to find the winner out of that one. And so eventually it was Bruce Clarkson who got the deputy chair.
So who's he?
He's one of the new... Well, in fact, they were both new councillors who were standing for the deputy chair.
Okay.
And they were both saying, oh, this is an advantage because we haven't been involved in all the previous goings-on. And we come with a new set of ideas to this.
But how many new councillors are there in the regional council?
There's been a big turnover there as well. I've forgotten the exact number. I think it's 8 new ones out of 14.
Okay, and we know, I mean, Pamela Storey...
We've got 9 out of 14 new ones on district council, so there's been quite a big change at local government level.
Well, we'll talk about that too, but the, who was involved? Pamela Storey kind of got caught up in the...
She made one of the complaints about other councillor, Fred Litchfield.
She was accosted by him in a car park after a meeting... So,
and Fred's version wasn't quite that. So who do you believe when there's only two people?
Well, the thing is, it wasn't only two people, though. There were a number of complaints from councillors, from staff, and from members of the public. So approximately nine. I'm not sure I'm exact on that figure, but yeah. So anyway.
And there was a report which found that there wasn't all that much to it. So, yeah.
Really?
Eventually, but that didn't get too much publicity. Yeah.
Let's be up front, and I'm sorry if Fred's listening, but I know an awful lot of people who say they've been accosted by Fred and did not enjoy the experience. Yeah. Fred does a lot of hard work on
including me.
Yeah, right, including you, John, yeah. Right, I'm one of the few. But maybe that might get my opportunity next. But he's done an awful lot of hard work and good work, so I don't want to deny that. But this is kind of the reality of that situation as well. And maybe we could say there was a clean out at the regional council because people were unimpressed with seeing their councillors in the national media for controversial reasons, or maybe it was just part of the turnover that seemed to go on a lot of councils around the country. We can't really say for sure, but we now have a new regional council chairperson who's Pamela Story. Was there a bit of a split? You said there was a split, 7-7 split. Could you see whether that was a split along conservative versus liberal lines or environmentalist versus farming? No, it was pretty clear, was it?
Except that our other councillor, Noel Smith, actually voted for what I'd call the environmental candidates.
Well, Noel's interesting. He seems conservative when you meet him, but then when I interviewed him, he said, look, I was doing riparian management 40 years ago on my farm. So, and he is a stickler for doing democracy properly, I think you could say.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out when it comes to other environmental votes. So
I guess Stu Kneebone was the conservative option?
No, he was the progressive option.
Oh, was he? Okay. Well, Pamela Story kind of straddles both camps. I wouldn't call her clearly a conservative option. Not in the realm of Russ Rimmington, the previous chairperson, for instance.
She was closely working with Russ, which is how she got to be chair of the Finance Committee as a new councillor.
Yeah,
let's
call that an astute...
Because that was an appointment by Russ Rimmington.
She wasn't mates with Russ.
They tended to vote the same way. Yeah.
I've spoken to her off the record about this. I just know that she wasn't mates with Russ.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I can really say. So I think it is a new council, and it's a kind of a new... Maybe it's a generational change as well. That's what I'm hoping. And that's what the staff will be hoping, having spoken to staff who've left recently after being frustrated with their experience. Do we know? What else do we know, John? Have they appointed committee chairs and things like that for regional council?
No, that's still to come. That's coming up in a couple of days' time. So they're having another meeting. But this was just to basically swear people in and elect the chair and deputy chair.
Yeah.
So once they've done that, the meeting finished and...
I hope that this 7-7 split in both these settings isn't an indicator of total gridlock for the regional council. I guess the chairperson has a casting vote.
Yeah, unless the chairperson's away, in which case it's the deputy chairperson who
has a casting vote.
Who's an environmental lecturer at Waikato University, so professor of environmental something at that university.
Okay, all right.
Forgotten what his title is, but.
So did it work out that the conservative side of the fence got the chair and a non-conservative side got the deputy chair?
Yes.
I think that's important for everyone feeling like they got a piece of the action keeping everyone calm.
Well, everyone after the vote said how they were willing to work together, but we'll see how that works out.
We'll see. I don't know. I'm not on the inside. I can't really tell. I'm not on the inside at all, and you don't really know what's going on.
Because I didn't realise that they'd had a couple of days of actually being together before they had that meeting, so they were sort of being inducted into all sorts of things and having discussions and such like.
Getting to know each other?
So.
They do. I mean, they do need to get to know each other and figure out how to work together. It's important.
Because some of them were making reference to that time that they'd had together and sort of basing their statements on just that and saying, I didn't actually know so-and-so until a couple of days ago. But
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's the region. It's a big region. If you're wondering, folks, up to south of Auckland, down to Ruapehu, I think, across to the Kaimais over here on the coast. So yeah, it's a big region. You wouldn't expect people to know each other. All right, so that's the regional council. As much as we can tell, maybe I should book an interview with Pamela Story and see when she's a, when they've appointed. Is it? Oh, so does she appoint the committee chairs?
Yes.
That is like that with the district council as well. Okay. All right. So that's regional council. Moving on to the district council, on Wednesday next week, they're having a meeting where the chairs of the subcommittees will be appointed. Folks, this is kind of important. If you're the chair of the Strategy and Finance Committee or the Infrastructure Committee, those are quite important roles. All the councillors go to these committees, and it's where a lot of the nitty-gritty decisions are made to be passed up to full council meetings where they're just kind of rubber-stamped. So important to have your say in those situations, John?
Well, except that as the Waikato Times has done several articles on, they've been having workshops on things rather than actually making decisions at the subcommittees. So
as well, all right.
The decisions tend to get made in the workshops and then rubber stamped at the subcommittees and then feather rubber stamped at the council meeting.
I sometimes think the complexity of all the issues that are under discussion, you couldn't go through them properly at a meeting. You'd need more, and also at a work, you need more time to get into the detail, but also you need the staff to be there to answer questions.
Well, that happens with the workshops as well. The only difference is that they're not open to the public and they're not minuted. So, and essentially, it's the same meeting, but the only thing that's absent is the public and the minutes. So you don't actually know what's gone on there and who's voted which way or who's spoken which way.
Well, it probably doesn't matter anyway, because there's not usually someone reporting on the subcommittee meetings. Anyway, I was talking to...
Well, that's why it would be good to have them on video, the way the regional council does them.
Yeah. I was talking to the PR, not PR, that's unfair, we'll say PR because I can't think of the term for the Hamilton mayor. And she was an ex-journalist, and she said the Waikato Times hasn't got enough reporters these days. They can't. So there's not a lot of accountability for Waikato District Council. There is for Hamilton City. Uh-huh. They have reporters there, but not so much for the District Council.
But again, Hamilton City has it on video, so you don't actually have to go along to a meeting and be there. But you can actually do it when it suits you to look at the meeting and see what's going on.
Yeah, definitely a question. I'm trying to book an interview with our new mayor, Jackie Church, at the moment. So probably after they've appointed the committee chairs. So that's a question I'll definitely ask her, I think.
Because she's going to be at the meeting this afternoon, because there is a meeting of the community board this afternoon.
Jackie Church is coming?
Yes.
So okay.
She's on the agenda to talk to the new community board.
Well, we'll talk about the community board in a moment. I wanted to just look at our stats for the voter return. So we came in at, what was it, 32%, John, was it? 32.3% total return. That's worse than last time, which was 34.4%, and better than 2016, which was 30.6%.
And below Huntley.
I'm talking about the district. Sorry, I should say I'm talking about the district right here. So that's the overall district return. The Whangaroa General Ward, we were just below Huntley. We're 37.5%. They had 37.7%. I like to think all the work we do here on the radio and putting out our transcripts, John, helps encourage to get the vote out. I got John to send me a previous election result, the returns for, what was that, 2013?
Yeah, those were the ones I could find quickly, 2013 and 2004. So
yeah, and so we weren't up by the top. The top was Onifero Tiako with 40%, and we were at 30. We're in the middle of the pack at 31.7. So, kids arriving at the Environment Centre. The Year 9 kids are coming in for some stuff today. So, what am I saying? I'm saying that I hope that the work we've done has increased the turnout of the votes in Raglan. It kind of looks like it has, according to those stats.
Yep. Well, the problem of local elections is always that people don't have enough information, so the more information they've got, the more likely it is they're going to vote.
We certainly, yeah, and we got some nice compliments from people. Hey, man. Yeah, go for it. One of our DJs, Emma, is the teacher bringing the kids into the Environment Centre. She's just come to grab a chair. I'll update you on the movements outside the studio. It's not that important. I hope we made a difference. Certainly people were saying complimentary things, including John Brown, the head of the comms department at Waikato District Council, sent me an email to say he thought it was the best reporting on the election he'd seen anywhere in the country.
Good.
So, yeah.
Because it seemed to me the problem was the candidates who weren't very keen to say what they actually wanted to do.
Yeah, John and I were talking about this off the air earlier. I tend to understand that, like, especially for a community board, you don't get much of a say. I'm voting, because I know them in person, I'm voting on character, abilities, work ethic, things like that. That's kind of how I vote, because it's a small town, and it's especially for me when I meet them all, I can do that. So I don't mind that I don't know what their policies are. And I kind of also, it's such a low-level political job, I don't fully expect policies. But John wants to know a little bit more, normally.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that there's quite a lot of important decisions facing this area at the moment, and in particular the rapid growth that we've got and how that's going to change or not change what we've got and things that people value. Like being able to find your parking space near the centre or being able to...
Yeah, that boat sailed, John. Well, actually, no, you can get a park right now, but, during busy times...
Yeah, you ought to do a service of saying there's a parking space outside now.
Yeah. We've got two parks over the road outside Bow Street Gallery. Now is the time. John, what do you care about parks anyway? You walk everywhere.
Yeah, but you have to dodge the cars when you're cycling.
Oh, yeah, because they're parking all over the show.
Yeah,
fair enough.
But it is going to become quite an issue once we've got an extra 500 or more houses over at Rangitahi, and an extra 500 people are going to want to come in and park their cars on the space that's already crowded. So at some stage, we need some policies as to what we're going to do about it.
We need a structure plan, John? Do we need a structure plan?
Well, we needed a structure plan in 2009, which is when they started doing one, but they've stopped.
Why is there, like Bob McLeod was always talking about this, why won't the council staff do a structure plan? Don't understand. What's the hold up?
Because we organised quite successful opposition to what they wanted to do, and they went away.
That around 2009 when they were going to turn the Cliff Street area into Mount Maunganui?
Yes.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. I'm critical of all sides here. Some of the local Raglan people were abusive to the council staff. I think that's stupid when people behave like that, but a lot of people keep doing it. But I also thought that the council staff, there was a complete lack of consultation prior to turning up with this grand scheme to have multi-story, was it three-story buildings or something around on Cliff Street and put a new road through the block there?
Yep.
And that doesn't work. That doesn't work in Raglan to surprise us with changes. And I actually talked to someone who was a young planner in the Waikato District Council around that time, and they said one of the senior planners there had this vision for Raglan that it was going to be the next Mount Maunganui. So, so they've got their fingers burned there, but they are more consultative now. I mean, we always criticise them, say you could do more consultation, but they're definitely more into consultation now than they were 10 years ago. I'd like them to have another go, John.
We'll see whether the new mayor comes up with that, because she, as I say, is talking about being more open and transparent. So that would be part of it too, actually. Because most other areas have got a structure plan, but we've not. And in fact, the Rangitahi has got a structure plan, and they're negotiating one for the area that are zoned by the Cornings next to it.
These are people who've got either got lots of money or are going to get lots of money from subdividing their land, and they can afford planners. And so they get a planner, and the planner does all the work, and they hand it to the council and say, here it is, it's all written up for you. It won't cost you anything to put this in the district plan.
Yep, that's a pretty good summary of what's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, if I was a property developer, I'd probably do the same thing. it makes sense. But in terms of planning for your community, it's not... You're not getting the big picture planning that we want. But John, I want to go back to these percentages of the voter turnout. As I said, we were on 32%. So we were not the worst district. We were only the ninth worst district, Waikato district. The worst was Matamata Piako, 25.7% voter turnout. Did they have a vote for mayor, or was it the same mayor coming back there?
No, there were very few seats contested, so that's why they were down at the bottom. And I think, the mayor wasn't contested.
Yeah, Hastings, don't know anything about Hastings, 25.8%, narrowly beaten to the worst place. Auckland Council, 26.6%. They were voting for a new mayor. It's a very high it's the most high profile election of the local body season, and 26.6%.
Yep.
If Fessor Collins failed to get the turnout from South Auckland, that would have voted him in. And he lost by quite a margin.
Yes, yep. And we were beaten for bottom place by Hamilton this time.
We're not bottom, John. Stop saying we're bottom.
Well, we're next to the bottom, aren't we?
No, we're ninth from the bottom.
Again, you're looking at different figures from ones I was looking at.
Hold on.
I think there's still final figures to come out, so either figure could be right. But we're well down towards the bottom.
Oh, no, hold on. This article's from 2019. What the heck?
Oh, yeah, 2019 was rather better. But
no, it's not. No, the article's not. It's not. From 8th of October 2022.
Okay.
Let me go.
We'll sort it out.
Oh, this is... Okay, sorry. This is this year compared to 2019. So they just got these blue and red arrows showing increase or decrease. We're not actually on the list for some reason. But at 32%, we come in ninth from the bottom, which is better than we've done in the past, let's be honest. But it's interesting, the mix. Like, you've got these rural areas like Matamata Piako, and no one can be bothered turning out because there's not many people actually standing. But then you've got Auckland Council, Hastings, Upper Hutt, Wellington, all in the bottom 10. Waipa District. The Waikato region's quite famous for poor turnout.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy with the status quo. Well, not everyone, but... And the best. Who was best? Kaikoura. 51.8%. Big increase there on their voter turnout. Southland also had the biggest increase in turnout.
And Kaikoura is one of the smallest districts in the country.
It is. Yeah. Southland, because... was that because the new mayor, the old mayor, was gone? Tim Shadbolt.
Quite likely, yes.
Yeah, to do with that. So, man, Hurunui, which is a little place down the east coast of the top half of the South Island, they went from being second best 3 years ago to being the bottom half of the pack, 35%. Again, that's a little rural council. So I don't know, John, are we learning much? One council got over half the vote return, and that was it.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting. I sent you the 2004 figures, and we had over half of people voting in 2004.
In Raglan, yes. Yeah, in fact, we were the number one vote that year.
So it shows how much it's gone down since then.
And nationwide, that's been the pattern over the last 20 years. Now, there's a lot of discussion about, we've got to get... one of the candidates was talking about if we have the local body elections the same time as the general election, you'll get more people voting. And I thought, well, you will, but they won't be very well informed. They'll just be voting because it's there. And a lot of people talking about maybe if we go digital, trying to make it easy. I read a very interesting article by Chris Trotter talking about, and it's something that I've talked about, I've kind of touched on, but hadn't thought too deeply about it, which is the thing I talk about is how the councillors, they employ the CEO of Waikato District Council, or all councils are like this, and the CEO tells all the staff what to do. The councillors can't talk to anyone except as a body, talk to the CEO officially. In practice, of course, that's completely impractical, and they all cultivate relationships with council staff, and the council staff want to talk to them because they want to hear what's happening on the ground in everyone's areas. So in practice, it's kind of different. But the structure of it, the structure is actually really anti-democratic. It has, and if you talk to the high-level council managers, they're quite defensive. They're quite keen to hang on to the system. And it is true, you don't want councillors coming in and leaning on people to make things happen, which has certainly happened in the past. And I don't know if there's a perfect solution, but at the moment we've got a situation where the people who are democratically elected are kind of kept at arm's length by the people making the decisions and making the more detailed decisions and some quite serious decisions. So, in this article, Chris Trotter talked about a hypothetical situation where a councillor came and said they were going to do something and got manoeuvred away from being able to do anything by sort of the expertise of the managers who knew the lay of the land.
It's a local yes minister situation.
Yeah, and like I know some of the, I've met some of the managers for council, and they're quite competent, good people, but there's just a structural problem here. And I get that they want to protect themselves from councillors who go off the deep end, who want to abuse their position of power. But by the same token, we've created this situation where there's a managerial class who's actually running the country. Same, and I understand it's the same at the national level, but I understand it better at this level because I can see how it works. And John, you and I had experience of this when we were doing that, trying to get that section of the district plan about Raglan, a Raglan special character zone, and a whole lot of stuff was typed up, ready to go. We spent hours working on this. Council staff spent hours working on it, and then at the last minute, a whole lot of stuff was pulled from the section that would have gone into the district plan by someone high up in the council, I don't know who, a high-level manager, just said, oh, no, you can't put that in.
Yeah, well, we keep experiencing this over all sorts of things, over the wharf, the airfield, and you can sort of think of any number of things where local councillors have been ignored and the decisions come from somewhere within the district council. But it's
some of those other ones, like the airfield one, I do understand what was driving the council managers, and they explained what it was, that the health and safety issues would be on their heads. But this thing, this experience you had, there was no explanation. It just suddenly disappeared, and there was really no recourse, no redress for us.
Yeah, except to take it through the Environment Court, which is where it is at the moment. So,
but we didn't. Did we take that section? Have you gone to the Environment Court over that?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's see. The Environment Court's slowly grinding its way through these things, which there's reports coming out from time to time. There was one yesterday with a whole list of things that they're making their way through on the district plan. So, yeah, that's
most,
amongst them.
Most people don't have the expertise that you have, John, and the ability to go to the Environment Court. Would I be able to speak on my own behalf?
Well, you also need to have several hundred dollars to spare to get into the Environment Court in the first place, and people don't see it as that important.
Yeah. Mm. My view of the big picture is, like in the end, we were trying to get stuff in to help with the housing crisis, as was the Whangaroa Raglan Affordable Housing Project, and pretty much everything got turned down. And I get that. You know, and this is also, there's the commissioners also. So the council, they get in experts to be the commissioners, and this is more of this expert managerial class. And I get that their job is to make sure everything functions well, so they're conservative. District, they don't want to put in a district plan that causes problems. So they're very conservative about what they do. But we're in a crisis now with housing and a few other things. And this steady-as-she-goes approach is not what's called for. But we've got this managerial class that just kind of runs everything, and they're quite inaccessible.
Yeah, because I found it interesting. You referred me yesterday to the review into the future of local government that's just come out.
Yeah, this is, yes.
They have a line in there that says, research across the field has shown that a well-facilitated group of citizens can make better decisions than a group of experts as they're coming into the topic with an open mind. And I think that's one of the problems, that you quite often have all that training and experience behind you. You don't actually come into a situation with an open mind.
Well, you're the expert. You don't have to have an open mind.
Yes. so that is recognised by the review onto the local government. It can be a problem.
And that also, when you go to talk to the managerial class, you need to present yourself as being one of them, as being an expert. And I know that I failed to do that, even though I have a university degree. I failed to do that in these meetings. At one point I was talking about poor people, and I should have said people of low socioeconomic status.
Yeah, right? You need to use all the jargon.
Yeah, you need to use all the jargon. And I also saw a planner had done a report that contributed to something somewhere in there. And there was this report, the planner spent the entire first page, A4 page, stating their credentials, their experience, their degree, like a whole page. And I'm thinking, if your argument is good and your facts are accurate, your credentials are irrelevant. They should be irrelevant. And if it's been presented to commissioners who are experts, then this idea that you need to establish that you're on the inside, that you're part of the managerial class, which is what's really going on, you shouldn't need to do it, but...
Well, they're called expert witnesses, and they're actually given a higher status, which seems to me to be totally wrong.
Yeah, I mean, well, logically you can see that. Okay, they're the experts, we should listen to the expert, but something's gone wrong somewhere.
And that was the problem with the Rangitahi planning, that the people down Opatura Road had a much clearer idea of what was going to happen than the expert planners.
I just call that a travesty. The commissioners completely just abandoned all responsibility for what they were doing and said, oh, if you didn't present a recognised expert, we won't listen to what... Well, then they listened on the day, and then afterwards they said, we're not paying any attention to any of those people who are against Rangitai because none of them were experts. Even though some of them presented expert information from experts, those experts weren't in the room while it was presented, so it didn't count. That's a real travesty, that decision, based on that. And I'm not saying whether Rangitai was a good idea or not. I'm saying the way they made the decision was really bad.
Yep, so I'm hoping that the reform of the Resource Management Act and the reform of local government is going to look at some of these things. And
but isn't it the managerial class who's doing this report, John?
Well, yeah, it's a 261-page report, and I can't imagine too many people reading.
I was trying to read the executive summary. Yeah, we need to look at that, but this is... Well, what will happen is... And it's interesting that experts don't always make expert decisions, but is that issue, like you say, of being open-minded about it?
Yeah, well, that was a quote that they came up with, so they seem quite in favour of having groups of experts. As I understand it, would be something like selecting a jury. So
not groups of experts, groups of non-experts.
Yes, yeah. So
groups of residents,
well,
citizens.
A group of representative people, yeah.
Yeah.
So a random selection of people. Because interestingly, I hadn't come across it before, but they're talking about one that Watercare's set up that's looking at how to provide water for Auckland.
Yeah.
And they've set up a panel of 40 people to look at it and to be told all the background to it and given information about it and then asked to come to decisions on where they should go to look for the next water supply for Auckland.
And I think one other thing I want to add into this is because I've actually read about this. The issue is the value system, so you don't get to become part of the managerial class and you don't get to be a high-level manager unless you display the right values. And none of this is not written down, right? This is just, oh, they're not the right kind of person, or you might be they're too radical, or they just don't fit, they're not a good suit, they're not a good fit. And the values, the basic value is if you don't show that you're going to defend the system, you don't get a high level in the system. And at the moment,
the establishment keeps going. With the establishment, yeah.
And it kind of makes sense. But at the moment, we've got several crises in front of us, and we might have to wait until it's very, very clear to everyone that the managerial class is screwed up before changes happen. I hope we don't have to, but yeah. Anyway, John, we're supposed to talk also about the community board meeting happening later today.
Yeah, well, there's not an awful lot to talk about because it's a fairly long agenda, but it's a long agenda because it sets out all the formalities. So basically, they're just swearing in the community board, doing what the regional council did of appointing a chair, which I don't know whether they've already decided who it should be, but as we've commented before, there seems to be an awful lot of people who don't want to be chair.
Yeah, that's all I knew. No, I couldn't find anyone who actually wanted to be. I did see Tony Ouston a couple of weeks ago, and I actually thought they should be behind the scenes trying to figure out who was going to be chair and not just turning up on the day and hoping to get the right decision. Like
they should, but well, I think they usually do. So
well, Tony seemed quite affronted that I thought that he would be doing that. So not seriously affronted, like I know Tony, but yeah, he seemed to think the right thing was just to do it in the open. So
yeah, well, I'd much rather it was done the way that the regional council did it, which was to ask for nominations, and they ended up with two nominations, and so two proposers and two seconders, and you could then actually see who was in favour of each side.
I guess I think of it from like committee levels, like, you know, I've been on the soccer club committee and the radio station committee. And if you don't pre-plan who's going to be in the positions, or you don't have some ideas before you go to a meeting, you end up with no one.
Yeah.
So that's my background.
But it's less likely when you actually get, what is it, about 8,000 a year as a chair, and you get about 4,000 a year as a member.
Yeah, but you,
so
it's
there
not,
is some financial incentive in it. Not a lot.
I don't know. I think you're better off financially taking the $4,000 a year than the $8,000, because the amount of work you have to put in if you're the chair, this kind of counteracts what is quite a small sum of money.
Well, it depends whether you're already volunteering to do the work. I mean, Lisa spends probably more than full-time doing it, but she's only doing a part-time job. So.
Yeah, you would say it's about a 20-hour-a-week job based on the pay, but yeah, she's clearly doing 40 at a minimum. And I'm sure people like like Dennis Amor. He was pretty busy last term, I think.
Yeah.
He would have been doing more than $4,000 worth of work a year.
Yes. So there's some people who've got more time spare, and the local government commission comment, or the local government review rather, comments that it shows up in more elderly people and people who've got more financial means behind them actually becoming councillors and representatives.
Yeah.
And that's something that they would like to change.
That's really important, like, because we have talked, this has come up over the last few years, is just the lack of remuneration for people on community boards. It's an important job, but it's hard to do it.
That local government report has a table comparing them with MPs, and
I must look at that.
MPs get about 50% more than the best paid of local councillors.
Than the best paid?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's councillors, whereas community board members are... although I guess the thing with a community board is you could be on there and not do much and still be reasonably effective, but we've had a community board certainly in the last 3 years who've wanted to get certain things done.
Well, there's always some people on the community board who do less than others, it's a matter of how motivated you are and...
Or just how busy you are.
Yep. And how busy you are, and it doesn't seem to show up in the votes at the end of the day, so the people who work hardest don't necessarily get the most votes.
Well, I would say our voting return was the exact opposite. The person who got the most votes, Ross Wallace, wasn't even a community board member previously, so he didn't do anything. I think Satnam came second, and I've made it quite clear to people that he's very busy with his work and doesn't have time to do much for the community board. Kerry was next, and she's only just arrived a year ago, so she hasn't done much either. And then
So the less you do, the more votes you get.
Well, I mean, to be fair, everyone... I think the main rule is most people get voted back onto the community board. And there was aside from Ross Wallace, who surprised me at the amount of votes he got, aside from him, there was a substantial gap. All the community board members, existing board members, their votes were all in a clump together, and there was a big gap to the next one, and then two tailenders. So. But
quite often, they've... appointed the chair on the basis of the person who's got most votes, so wouldn't surprise me if Ross became chair, given that there were so many other people who said they didn't want to be chair.
Yeah, maybe, but maybe he doesn't want to be... Like, would you want to be chair when you've just turned up and you don't know much? I mean, I tried that once. I was chair of the soccer committee in my first year on it, and I just didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah. Well, the first Labour Party meeting I turned up at, I was appointed secretary. I didn't know anything about the Labour Party or being secretary. But in situations where other people don't want to do the job, that can happen.
It can happen, yeah. So, well, we'll find out anyway later today, 1:30, in the Town Hall supper room is the community board meeting. No open forum this time because there's no chairperson to run the open forum. It will be run by, is it the chief executive or one of the managers anyway? Maybe Tony Whitaker will come out.
It doesn't say who's coming apart from the mayor is coming.
The mayor is coming, okay.
That's, and they're also looking at three funding applications. So from the Community Arts Council, from the gym, and from the Community Patrol.
Raglan Community Health and Fitness Gym. Is that a commercial operation over there, or is it the one down under the...
I think it's the one down under the Town Hall. I'm not certain of that.
Yeah, okay.
We'll find out this afternoon.
Arts Council, $1,500 for the Film Festival. Community Patrol, $870 for 25-year celebration. Shout out to Nan, our DJ, who's been heavily involved, Nan and Peter, keeping the Community Patrol going. I know it almost disappeared a few years ago because the person who had been running it passed away, and there was a lot of work to be done to get it up and running again. Narina was part of that. And, John, anything else?
No, that's... basically it. I'm expecting it's going to be a relatively short meeting, but I could be wrong.
So let's look at the recommendations then from the review into the future for local government. One of them is dropping the voting age to 16. And people, I know a lot of people are like, 16-year-olds don't have a clue. But I think a large part of our population doesn't really have a clue who they're voting for. At least if they're 16 and voting at school, their teachers can take them through a process of learning about candidates and all that sort of thing, and maybe take them down during class or doing the voting during class time, so then they have the experience of voting, and it may well cause more of them to vote and pay attention later on?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they did a survey and said 55% of survey respondents think the voting age should be lowered. So that shows that there's quite a lot of support for that idea.
Austria did it in 2007, Scotland in 2015, and Wales in 2021. They all voted their local election voting age to 16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it seems to be something that's catching on, and it's certainly a recommendation from this report.
Yeah. Single transferable vote, they think that's important.
Well, quite a lot of councils already have it, but ours doesn't, so you end up with a situation like we had with Jackie Church, who's our new mayor. She was standing also for council, and she got the highest vote in her constituency, but because she was mayor, somebody with about 500 votes got elected onto the council. So if we'd had a single transferable vote, probably that wouldn't have happened.
Right, that might have helped with that situation.
Yes. So you'd have been able to vote for Jackie Church as your number one choice, but then you could have made a number two choice.
I think they had two councillors from the area, so you would have wanted a number three choice as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it does show the problems that can arise with first-past-the-post voting, and I think that's why the report recommends single transferable vote.
Yeah, and we also get the situation where if a mayor's unpopular, quite a lot of people will run against the mayor and they split their votes off.
Yes.
And you actually saw in Auckland, like because Auckland's so high profile and there's so much power being the mayor of Auckland, that the right-wing candidates were very organised about it. And as it became apparent through polls, I guess because they do polling up there, don't they?
Yes.
Yep. As that became apparent about who was going to be the lead right-wing candidate, all the other right-wing candidates pulled out. And even including one who pulled out after the voting papers had been sent out, a little bit disorganised, but someone must have been twisting her arm in the background saying, come on, the guy, we want our team to win.
Yeah, so I think it was 2016 when our mayor got in with just over 10% of people voting for him.
But that's 10% of the eligible population, but about 35% voted.
So the runners-up had about 8 or 9%.
So he's still got a lot less than half of the actual votes.
Yes.
Yeah, which is, I mean, you say 10%, it sounds ridiculous, but that's because most people weren't voting, that he only got 10% of the eligible population.
So you get something which is much more representative than what's almost a random first-past-the-post in some situations.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, we'll see what happens. They also talk about extending the election period, the term time, to 4 years. And a lot of politicians do say it's really hard to get things done in 3 years.
Yes.
Bureaucracies move slowly. This is true. We know this. We talk about it a lot here on The Morning Show.
Because they're also talking about extending government 4 years as well as local government. So that might well happen. There seems to be a move in that direction.
It depends. I mean, if you treat elections like a sporting event, then the more often they happen, the better.
Their argument is that having elections too often puts people off getting involved because they get fed up with seeing it too often. But on the other hand, they have arguments in favour of keeping it at 3 years and saying that some authorities abroad have elections every year. So it seems to be, again, a very variable period.
I guess for the national elections, because there's such a huge amount of campaigning done, like in many months leading up to the election, are really everyone's thinking about the election and they're making decisions and setting policies based on the fact that it's an election year rather than actually just focusing on the work. So I can see that for that level. I don't know, John. Do you have an opinion, strong opinion?
Well, my preference is to keep it at 3 years because if you've got something bad, then changing it every 3 years is good. But on the other hand, if you've got something good, it's good to keep it going 4 years. So, and obviously everyone has a different idea of what's good and bad. So my feeling is that 3 years works quite well and we've been used to it. And I can't see that it's going to make much difference, but.
If they do, one thing, thinking about the, they're talking about civics education in schools, and I don't know why they don't do it, except they probably do it in a way that the kids don't really connect with it. But if they could vote, if the 16, the final 2 years of school kids could actually vote and participate in an election, I think that would make all the difference to their learning. But you'd have to have, then they'd have to be able to vote for, because you don't want any age group, any year of kids to miss out. So you'd want to stagger, if you had a four year election cycle, general election, then 2 years later, local body election, like that. And then you'd always get, the kids would always have a vote at some point while they're at school, unless they leave school early, but most of them don't these days.
So certainly the improvement of civics education is linked with that 16 voting age, because otherwise you learn about something and then maybe 2 years later you've forgotten about it. So
yeah, it's very theoretical and quite hard to just remember. You know, if it's real for you, it's definitely easier to remember. So I'm here talking to John about the local body, the recommendations for changes to local government. This is a draft version. They're very clear that this is to show you their thinking at this stage, and you can comment. But it's not, nothing is set in stone at all. They expect it to evolve. They had three models for types of councils, which I thought I wasn't interested in the model so much as is the power going to be devolved to the lowest level possible.
Well, that was only in model one, which was the regional council and community boards. So that would, I'm not sure whether putting it as model one shows that's their first preference or whether it's just a random thing that they put that in. But it's to try and show how the rest of the discussion document might work out in practice.
But see, that could turn out, if the community boards don't actually get any real power and all the power is held by the staff, that would be worse than keeping our current system but devolving powers to the community board.
Yep.
That's the thing. So that's the real question. It's not, to me, the model is less important than are they genuine about devolving power? Because we certainly believe here that better decisions are made locally, best decisions are made locally.
Well, you're better informed about what happens locally because you see it day to day.
Yes.
And I quite often say I've no idea how to run Tuaco, and I don't see why a Tuaco councillor should have any idea how to run Raglan. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, so it's pretty much the end of the show, John.
Well, we haven't mentioned one of the major chapters in there, which is on how to implement Te Tiriti and bring that into local government. And there is a whole chapter in there and there's a whole series of ideas, and really it doesn't reach any firm conclusion, recommendations.
The whole document is not about firm conclusions, that much I can see. So that's going to be interesting. Because, like, it's all through. It's not just a section. Like, it's all through every section. And this is going to give some something for the ACT Party to campaign against.
Probably.
Yeah, yes. This is actually my worry. Like, I'm fine with it. But it's so dominant through it that I think that the ACT Party will and other people of that ilk will find ways to drum up some opposition. And we've seen in the past their ability to twist factual information to make it look worse than it is. And worse is not even the right word I'm looking for here, but, you know, exaggerate things. So I don't know. Yeah, we're going to have to provide a lot of information about that, aren't we, John?
And the other thing that we haven't mentioned that's in there is about them using an online presence, as they call it. So actually increasing the amount of information that's available online. But also recognising that there's a risk of what they call digital exclusion, so people who don't have ready access to computers or phones or whatever.
But those people are excluded anyway.
Well, like they're saying that they shouldn't be.
No, they shouldn't be, but they're the same people who aren't going to go to the council and look at the document, the physical documents, right?
Yeah, well, there's a discussion in the document as to how that should be done. And we should mention that we've got until the end of February to put ideas back to them. So
we should try and do more about this later on, John, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and meanwhile, today we've got the 1:30 meeting of the community board in the supper room.
Yep, town hall. Yep, no open forum today because there's no chairperson to run it. They'll elect the chairperson during the meeting. We'll report back on that anyway. I'll report back on it tomorrow morning. But John, what was the thing I was going to say? Oh, the biggest problem with one of the biggest problems, like they're talking about the digital divide, but just getting information about what's happening out to council, there's nowhere it's been done. We do it here, Like, I don't know anyone else anywhere who puts out the level of information that we do, so that people, if people want to actually know what's happening with their council, they can find out, and we will provide it for them. We'll do our best. I mean, God
we
knows.
We struggle as well.
We struggle. We've got a tiny, tiny budget, but if we can, but I don't see it happening anywhere else. And I was so frustrated during the election. I saw something about Whanganui Council. And I looked at it, and all it was there'd been some controversy and someone had shouted at someone else, and that was all they were reporting on. And generally the national media reports on the left versus the right approach, the local body election, but I don't think left versus right is very important. Like some of the people on the community board, I don't know what their politics are. I've mentioned Dennis Amor before. I expect his politics to be a bit different to mine because of the things he's done in his life, but it's completely irrelevant. It's never even crossed my mind to find out, because I know him and I know his work ethic and his decision-making ability and his determination to understand things before he makes decisions. And that's way more important than you know, and especially when we're talking about making decisions in town about what happens with a walkway or a footpath or a road or sports fields. Like, so the national level reporting is completely useless. It's actually just useless for understanding what's happening at a local body level. I'm in danger of doing a rant, but I should stop, John. Or have I done one?
Okay, we've got 10:05, so
I know.
Maybe it's time to stop ranting.
I kept talking. But yeah, that's just this exercise of doing what we did this year, where we interviewed everyone and did transcripts and tried to get information out. It made me realise just how little information is actually out there for people.
Yeah, because that's discussed in the document as well as to how you get information out to people. And it's always difficult. You can't, as I say, expect people to read all 261 pages of a document.
No, and that's where we come in. Like, that's literally our job, is to try to summarise it and point out where we think the fishhooks might be and things like that.
Yeah, but we probably bring in our own biases on that as well.
Oh, well, we do. We're human. It's better than, and it's a lot better than nothing. And if people know us, like John, you and I are known. People know what our biases are.
Yep.
So, and they can take that into account. I'm quite kind of open about how I feel about things, and I think that's more honest than trying to pretend to be neutral, which nobody is.
Yep, I'm convener of the local Green Party, so yeah,
yes.
That's where my bias is.
Yeah, that's right, we know, yeah, exactly, yeah. Hey, John, thanks for coming in, and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.